Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Catonsville, down from Paradise, around the corner from UMBC. Former State Senator Bobby Zirkin joining us here, and of course, former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller in the house as well. I'm surprised you haven't been recognized yet. You always said that you were always 5 minutes away.
I did. I went over there. I did.
You talk about your family being 5 minutes away. Moeller's family's always 5 minutes away because he never leaves Catonsville. And he's related to everybody Catonsville, I think.
I was at an event last night where Corbett was honored, and they said if you got all the Corbetts and all the Moellers, there would be no place to eat in Catonsville because they would take every seat. You know, throw the Morse burgers in, we'll have to go to Arbutus, so because there won't be enough places.
Where's Jimmy Malone?
Jimmy's around.
He's around here somewhere.
That's right. You're never alone with Jimmy Malone. Well, let's get back, Bobby. We're with former State Senator Bobby Zirkin. A lot of things happening in your life. I don't want to get away today though without having you talk about, and you're not alone in this, special relationship that developed between you and Senate President Mike Miller. I mean, Mike stepped down, longest serving Senate President of the United States. We all wish him good health, hope he's, you know, doing well in his battle with cancer. Talk about your relationship with the senator, because it was special.
Yeah, I love the man. I really did. And we fought, you know, over issues, but I loved going. You know, people go in, the hardest job in the entire world. I mean, I used to sit in his office and people come in and they were, you know, pissing and moaning about
it. Everybody wants something.
Everybody wanted something. When I went in there, I'm like, I would always say to him first, I'm like, dude, I don't want anything. I just want to get your opinion about a couple ideas that are floating through our committee, because he was chairman of JPR and a great lawyer, and I love talking the law with him. I really...
Define JPR for everybody.
Sorry, judicial proceedings. So in the Senate...
You've referenced that three times, and I was one of
the... I apologize. In the House, there are six committees.
One of the committees.
It's one of the four. Every bill goes into one of four committees in the Senate: budget and tax, education, health and environment, finance, and JPR, which is judicial proceedings. Our domain, and it's based on the type of bill that it is. So the bills that went in there: criminal law, civil procedure, family law, corporate law,
all
states
of
and trusts.
The legal community. Yes, senators that have more of a legal, that would be where you would be.
That's
right?
Where you like to be. If you like the law, that was where you really wanted to be.
The other committees are. Give me the other three.
Education, health, and environment.
Okay.
Finance.
Okay.
And budget and tax.
So finance, if you're an accountant or you're in the
health insurance issues,
okay.
All the business type stuff went in there.
Take us back to your relationship.
As someone who's just a citizen that's checking boxes, I want to know that, like, we have smart people sitting in these seats that are qualified to be making these decisions.
Yeah,
I mean, I did not go to law school. You did.
Yeah, no, they're you know,
I was drinking, going to Zeppelin shows.
Right. That sounds like fun, actually. The bills that go in there, there are really technically legal. I mean, it's really the place where you want to have some type of legal background. But there are guys that are in there, like Mike Huff, he's from Frederick County, or Justin Reedy from Carroll County, who get in there and they, you know, after a couple years on JPR, you should be a lawyer, because they really fabulous legislators who, you know, the best part of our committee was we were widely considered the least partisan committee. When I was the chair for 5 years, I told everybody, you know, you do not criticize each other out in the press. Like, we're a family here. We got to roll up our sleeves and try to figure this stuff out. There's no left or right. There's no Democrat, Republican. Leave all that crap.
Take it down the hall.
Leave it at the door.
Yeah, right.
Before we go back to your relationship with Senate President Miller, since you're talking about judicial proceedings, you know, the critics would always say, it's at JPR. It's where good bills go to die. You know, no matter, that's where bills die, things that would really be good. What do you say to people who say, I mean, I know you heard it.
Right. So I would say, first of all, if it was a good bill, it wouldn't have died. But putting that aside, the first thing you want to make sure you do is no harm on that committee, right? Because when you make a mistake on budget and tax, like, you spend some taxpayer money in a way that shouldn't have been spent that way. Not that that's a good thing. It's a terrible thing. But that's not somebody getting killed, right? That's not somebody being put in jail who shouldn't be in jail. That's not, you know, abridging some constitutional right like free speech, right? So when you make a mistake on, when you made a mistake on JPR, somebody got hurt, and so really hurt, or killed. And so, you know, people wanted what they wanted immediately, maybe not necessarily understanding what was in the details of the bill. And the philosophy of our committee was, if you weren't sure that this wasn't going to have some unintended consequence, which was consequential, then we would not pass the bill. So, for example, the thing we were talking about, you know, off air about the so-called Trust Act, right? Very good philosophy. Like, everybody, you know, I think everybody wants to figure out, make sure that, that immigrants are not being persecuted on the street and the paper, all that stuff.
Cages, the people,
all that stuff, right? Yeah. But that's a federal issue. But the thing, you know, I got whacked around a little bit by some of these groups because we didn't pass this bill. And the reason we didn't pass it is there was a provision in that bill which could have gotten somebody killed. And as I told you, you know, it, basically what it was you had to, no matter what, everybody, including corrections and jails, would have to ignore the federal government immigration folks, which makes zero sense if you have a dangerous person there. If you have a dangerous person in your prison system, I don't think anybody thinks it's a smart idea to let them out on the street, which is exactly what happened this past summer when Prince George's County decided to do that on their own, and now there's a dead 13-year-old girl because of it. We were being asked in this bill to do just that, which was idiotic. No matter who's screaming and yelling at you, there was no way we were going to put people's lives at risk like that, and that bill specifically put people's lives at risk, and so we wouldn't pass it. And so the point being that, you know, the reason a bill like that dies isn't because it's a, quote, good bill. It's because it puts people's lives at risk. And we were never going to do that because some group wanted it or some philosophical reason or because somebody disliked the president, you know, enough that we had to stick it to him. Those are not good reasons to put Maryland citizens' lives and you know, health at risk. And so that often in JPR, you would get bills that did just that. And I'm not saying we had all the answers, but if you didn't know what you were doing, the bill should not pass because it could have some very bad consequences.
And as you said, I mean, and I know you were proud to inherit the mantle, but when you look at JPR and the chairs that had been there, Mike Miller, Brian Frosch, I mean, these are big time folks with
Brian Frosch,
with
our
legal
guest in April,
coming up in
good
April.
Man, good man. He warned me about that job.
It's a difficult job. Go back to your relationship with former Senate President.
I love Mike Miller.
How did the relationship evolve, Bob? Because you were a delegate and then you were a young senator. How did you and Mike grow this relationship?
We didn't start. I didn't really know him when I was in the House. I came in and my senator and I didn't exactly. We weren't exactly simpatico. So I came in and Mike did not put me on judicial proceedings. And so I developed a habit, which he was not fond of killing bills on the floor. Like me and Jamie Raskin were sitting in the back row. And I mean, just bad bills would come out of Judicial Proceedings Committee that I thought were should never have seen the light of day. And I'd get up on the floor and we'd have these massive floor fights on predominantly judicial proceeding bills. And one by one, we were mowing them down on the floor till finally, you know, Miller just threw up his hands. He's like, all right, we'll put him on the committee, I guess. And so I kind of fought my way on there. But I love Mike. He's smart and substantive. And all the things you saw, like the trolls on social media and the stuff said about him was all false. It just he's as substantive a guy as I've ever met in politics. It was when my mom was going through cancer, which did not end well, obviously. Mike was going through it at the same time. It was like a double whammy for me. He looks great. I mean, I just texted with him last night, and he's you'll never have another one of him. And I say to people,
oh, he's an original. I say that
you'll never have another one.
All the time.
He kept these partisan forces, which you see everywhere going on, right? And you see him in state capitals all over the country, and certainly in Washington, which is like absolutely
the epicenter,
epicenter of stupidity. But the in Mike almost single-handedly kept those forces at bay. I love Bill Ferguson. He's a good guy, and I think he's a great choice for Senate President. I'm fearful for him, not because of his leadership, because I think he's going to try to do the same thing. But the forces are strong, and it really Mike Miller held that.
Well, he's larger than life, Bobby. I mean,
couldn't mess with him.
One of the things that Nestor loves to do here on Baltimore Positive, and again, we're chatting with former Senator Bobby Zirkin, is to take a look at leadership. Leadership's such a theme on this show. What describe for folks who aren't in Annapolis? What is it that made Mike? What did Mike do that allowed him to work with multiple governors, as you said. It's like herding cats in the General Assembly.
Right.
And he was able to keep... Somebody said to me one time, it's not just keeping the balls in the air. It's knowing which balls should be in the air.
Well, somebody long-term has to be some semblance of a voice of reason for us to have... There's got to be glue in the middle. Somebody's got to be...
He was the glue. So and Mike Bush, too.
So how did they do that? Talk to us about their leadership.
I have no idea how he did what he did. I mean, you had to keep these forces. I have no idea, because nobody else really has been able to do it around the country. You look at all these states that are so crazy partisan. Like, Mike really kept it. Because he kept people, like, everybody had their say. He made enough time for everybody. Everybody's opinions mattered. He called people in. He listened to what people had to say. He had his opinions, obviously, but he really did not strong arm you. You know, there were things that if he was really passionate about something, he would let you know. But those were few and far between. Like, he really allowed senators to be themselves. And I think in that way, he everybody felt an affinity, a kinship with him. Even if you disagreed with him on every issue, you still felt like your voice was being heard, that your opinion mattered down there. It's a skill set that is – he's an extraordinary human being.
At his core, is he a family guy, Bobby?
He is.
At his core.
He is.
He's
a family guy. He's got a great family. He'd have his wife and his kids down there and his grandkids. He's got a million of them. I mean, he's you'll never see another one like him. He's just an extraordinarily – talented leader, and I say leader because he's not a politician. He like you said, it's like herding cats to for these. The wings have gone out farther, as you know, in politics now. So it's like herding the group is not. He didn't have this moderate center that he could rely on. So he had to kind of talk to these fringes. And even they felt like they were bought into the process. It's just, I have no idea how he did what he did. I could never, on my committee, you know, we had that on our committee, too, within the small 11 of us. We had that kind of a kinship and affinity and working together and all the rest. I could never figure out the politics all that well. I could always figure out the policy. I could never figure out the politics all that well.
46, 47 years as Senate president just will never be matched. Bobby, you were down there before we talk about I do want to talk about your recent trip to Israel and what you're doing now. Before we do that, you were down there 20-some years. Toughest vote you ever had to make and why it was tough. I mean, you were involved. We had capital punishment, gay marriage, in-state tuition. What was the toughest vote you had to make in your 20 years down there?
Death penalty.
Walk us through that and why it was.
So the death penalty, I was always very torn on it. If I'm from a philosophical standpoint, again, an easy conversation to have in a bar, in a restaurant, very hard to push the button to either kill or not kill somebody. That is not so simple when you get down to having to push that button. And as it turned out, I was the swing vote in the Senate. Like, there were, so to make a very long, I was very torn on it. You hear these stories of these monsters who do these just unimaginable things to people, and you want to like reach out with your hands and
do something
yourself, right?
Sure.
But at the same token, you also have, you know, the possibility of somebody being wrongly convicted. And for those who have never been in a courtroom before, if you haven't been, if you have been, you know that that's a possibility.
Well, I just saw the movie Just Mercy that people are saying.
The Bloodworth
takes your
case,
breath away.
Jim Smith's Bloodworth case, right? I mean, there are...
Where Jim keeps the DNA.
He kept the DNA.
By chance.
In his closet.
In his closet.
Which is a crazy story.
In his judicial chambers, Jim Smith.
Guilty
great,
guy on death row that could have gone to death. That
it.
Could have been executed, and because...
Smith just had a feeling shouldn't dispose of this.
Right. I don't know why he had it.
He can't explain why he had the feeling.
But at the end of the
ends
day,
up exonerating.
I don't know this story.
I'll tell you the story. Yeah, it's a long
one. It's
a
great story.
So at the end of the day, so I originally was voting to keep the death penalty. I was like, I'm not. We only had 8 or 9 people on death row. It was more of a cocktail party conversation than anything else. Martin O'Malley was, I mean, you know, banging on me left and right to vote for it. I was really torn on it. It gets to the floor of the Senate, and the House had already passed the repeal of the death penalty. It gets to the Senate, and the Baltimore Sun had polled every senator, and there's 47 of us, and 23 people said they were for the repeal, and 23 said they weren't, and I hadn't talked to them because I hadn't made up my mind yet. So I was literally...
No spotlight on you at all.
Oh, my God, it was the worst thing. So O'Malley,
your wife's going, Bobby, what's...
Oh, my God. Everybody was calling me. It was miserable, including, but not limited to, Martin had Elie Wiesel, you know, Holocaust survivor, from, had him call me, and I thought it was my friend. And so I said, "Listen, I don't have enough time for this shit." And hung up the phone on Elie
like
Wiesel.
Elie Wiesel really wouldn't be calling me.
And then Martin calls me. He's like, "I just had Elie Wiesel call you. Did you hang up on him?" I'm like, "Oh, sorry about that. And then call me back." So I call him. Like, so I have a conversation with him. Anyway, I got to the floor. I had not made up my mind. But the debate's going on. People are hollering and screaming and reading speeches and all the rest. And I'm sitting there like my head is pounding. And I had written up an amendment the night before.
Do you know about this when you were putting the signs up back in
'98? No, God, I would never have run. I mean, what a responsibility. So I had an amendment up, and I said, because I was trying to figure out if there was a way to strike a middle ground on the death penalty. I always try to find the middle ground. And so I had an amendment, which I wasn't even sure was a good idea. But so finally, I hadn't made them. They were about ready to take the call, and I didn't know what to do. So I jumped up. I'm in the back row, way back, and I go, Senator, I have an amendment. And Miller looks at me like with glaring eyes. He's like, "You do?" I said, "Yeah, I have an amendment." So I pass it out, and then we start debating. And there was I didn't realize how many people were very uncomfortable in their positions on the death penalty one way or the other. And this amendment said we were going to keep the death penalty, but you could only seek it if you had certain evidence. You had to have conclusive DNA evidence, a videotaped confession, because the confessions had been done by writing and we wanted to get away from that, or a videotape conclusively showing basically the murder, which you'd never find except on Law and Order. So basically you had to have conclusive DNA evidence, which in addition to everything else, it was kind of, I didn't want the wrong person being convicted. I don't even know if this was a great idea or not, but that was my idea. And so I threw it out there to start the conversation. I didn't quite realize that was going to catch as much fire as it did. And to make a very long story short, that amendment got on the bill, like, overwhelmingly. The Senate decided we're not getting rid of the death penalty. People had second thoughts. We're gonna go this route.
Is this like when the Beatles scribbled down "Hey Jude"?
It was on a napkin. I still have the napkin. When I wrote it down the night before at like 1 o'clock in the morning, I got up in the middle and then I'm like,
the best
I
idea
stuck something down. This is the only way I can feel comfortable. Anyway, it became the law. The House, because they knew they couldn't get the vote. I said, "Look, I can't vote for anything but this." So they're like, "We don't have the votes." So the House passed it too. It became the law for 2 years. It got completely panned by every lawyer in the country. I mean, there were articles written about how moronic my amendment was, which they probably were accurate. But and so 2 years later, Martin brought it back again. He says, "I want to get rid of it." And so I voted for the repeal very reluctantly, and it ended up passing actually with a couple extra votes. That was the hardest vote by not even a close second. That was one where I mean, I'm sitting there listening to this debate, knowing that whichever way I pushed, that was the way it was going to go.
And what made it hard, Bob? This is what's so interesting. This is why we love Baltimore.
Well, I think
positive.
It's hard to change your mind on anything, right?
Well,
to say, I did this yesterday, I do this tomorrow.
Well, but I think
that's part of the human condition, but it's unacceptable.
I think it might be more than that, though, Nestor, and that's why I want to ask Bobby. I think the reason it was hard, and tell me no, Don, not at all, is that you really were conflicted.
I was conflicted on the issue.
As to what the right...
Yeah.
You understood...
There was a case on the Eastern Shore where some monster raped and murdered this little girl and then burned her body and urinated on her. And I will never forget listening to Scott Schellenberger talk about this case. And when you hear this, and then at the trial was mocking the family. I mean, you want to reach out and do something yourself, right? And so I think to myself, like, that person does not deserve to live on this planet. But then you listen to the Bloodsworth case, and you think to yourself, well, that guy did it, but that guy didn't do it, and he could have been executed, and that would have been the state murdering somebody. And then you get into the whole philosophy of should the state be doing it? I mean, there's so many different factions of it. I was completely torn on this issue. I could, on any given argument, I could go back and forth. And so I tried to strike a middle ground, which was effective, yet not probably.
Well, I think it's great that you can look back and say, yeah, probably wasn't the best.
It was a good try.
But take that and we'll let the Mike Miller thing go. Despite that, and despite Mike looking at you, as you said, just with laser eyes, and probably saying, "Bobby, this is the dumbest thing ever."
No, he voted for the amendment, He actually thought it was a pretty good amendment. I think he thought he had the votes to kill. He definitely did not want to repeal the death penalty, and I think he thought he had the votes to kill it.
Very interesting. Well, take us, let's jump all the way up to 2020. Those of us who are friends with you on Facebook and follow, you just had what looked to be an amazing trip with the family to Israel.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners about that trip. What prompted it? What made you say, let's go to Israel now? And then tell us about the experience.
So my daughter's getting, one of my oldest is getting bat mitzvah this year. And so it was a bar bat mitzvah trip for her and the family. And for those who've been to Israel, they know Mount Masada. It's just absolutely just stunning. The whole country's stunning. The whole state of Israel is just stunning. I mean, where else can you sit there? I went to a bar with my friend who was on the trip with us, and within 3 miles over there was Syria, and 3 miles over there was Lebanon. I mean, it's like...
Was this the first trip for your girls?
First trip to Israel
for my
girls.
But not
your
girls'
trip. Not my. I've been one other time, but a long time ago when I was working in Europe doing collegiate athletics, I ran over to Israel, but not in almost 30 years that I've been there.
Help us see it through your children's eyes.
Oh, my God.
Through the eyes of a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. Give us their view.
Just see, you know, I mean, it's so different. You go an hour, and you go from a city, like what you would consider a modern-looking city on the water, like Tel Aviv, and then all of a sudden you're out in the mountains where there have been multiple wars, and you're sitting there with countries just a couple miles away from you that... Not legitimately, but they absolutely would like want to kill you if they could, if they come over the border. Like those armies would come over the border. You go down to Jerusalem where you're seeing things that are thousands of years old. I mean, I just took a trip with my kids to Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty, and it was funny because they were saying, "Oh, this is an artifact of," and it was from, you know, 1910 or something. And my kids had just seen artifacts from 7,500 years ago or something. You know, I mean, like thousands of years ago, you're at the Wailing Wall, you know, which is the old temple. And this is thousands of years old. It just, we, on our bus, the tour guide was just amazing. And every once in a while he would, and he wasn't religious at all, which was interesting because he'd bring out the Bible and he would I was sitting up in the front. So he had me read a couple passages. But it was purely for the purposes that he would say, stop. He goes, that mountain over there, that's the mountain that they were just referencing. And that individual, the tree that they're talking about, right over there on the right. I mean, you just saw these things in the Bible. Everything in the Bible, they're talking about and you're looking at it, right? The Mount Olive, the Olive Mountain, and the temple, and King Herod, and all these things you learn in all these different religions. And you're just sitting there looking at all of it. And it's just... just extraordinary.
What does it do, Bobby, for you and your family, and I'm sure your girls have talked about it, in terms of your Judaism, your Jewish faith? What does that feel like when you're in Israel?
I would not consider myself particularly religious, but I certainly am very
spiritual. There you go.
And I care very much about my religion, and it definitely expands on it, and for me, in addition to the religious and spiritual aspects, just the political aspects of it, to see and to hear all the things that the state of Israel had to go through in order to even exist, and the enemies that surrounded it, and the numbers of times that multiple armies marched into Israel to try to kill every one of them and throw them into the sea. It's just extraordinary how they are, and it makes me, I mean, I'm already very, you know, very pro the state of Israel. But, you know, I come back here and I listen to even some of our presidential candidates talk, and it would appear that they have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, when you talk, we're not going to solve the Israeli-Palestinian issue here today. We'd need 10 more shows at least. But when you look at it, is a potential two-state solution down the road the way to go, or is that just not possible?
Well, I think it is, but you have to have a willing partner, right? You can't have peace partnerships with people who don't want peace, right? Like, that doesn't work. And so when you have Hamas or Islamic Jihad, like, launching rockets into your country all the time, think about if we had a neighboring country launching rockets into some major city in our country, what we would do at that point in time. And it's just extraordinary. I mean, like, while we were there, rockets were coming in. Mm. Not into the town where we were, but there were literally rocket attacks while we were there. I mean, to most Americans, to all Americans who, you know,
That's inconceivable.
It's inconceivable that you
sitting in Florida.
The first time I ever conceived it was about 8 weeks ago. I was in Seoul, South Korea, and realized.
And you were 40 miles.
I'm 40 miles away. Like we could get on a bus and be there in 45
That's
minutes.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, boy, I hope today's not the day the orange guy wakes up in the wrong mood with the wrong. You know,
we got missiles going back and forth here.
Yeah, I hope today's not the day that we're testing. You know,
or think about it this way: what Bobby's
saying.
Signed
up for you, yeah. you know, just like you signed your family up to go over, knowing like you are more in harm's way. Some would say downtown Baltimore is in harm's way. We don't believe that, but you would be in harm's way. I mean, it's part of the life experience. You want to go to Israel, you're going to be in harm's way from the minute you land. To
I felt very safe.
Sure.
But in answer to your political question about
the two-state solution.
Sure. But it depends. There's so many complicated details on the, like, Jerusalem and the, you know, the so-called right of return and the political. Like, if you have a, like, it is a Jewish state, right? And so it's hard to figure out how to maintain that with some of the questions that are out there with a two-state solution. That being said, sure, if you could figure out the confines of it, that had been offered multiple times. I mean, Yasser Arafat never missed an opportunity to miss an opportunity. I mean, the two-state solution could have been in existence for many years at this point in time, but the Palestinians walked away from the table. They didn't want it. They wanted all of Israel, and they're not going to get it, right? I mean, it just, you know, when you have somebody that you're, quote, negotiating with whose sole purpose is to make sure that you cease to exist, it's a little challenging to start from that. If everybody started from the position of, okay, we all agree that everybody's right to exist exists, you can at least start having a conversation. But that's not where they are right now. I mean, it's amazing to me. When we were in the Golan Heights, which is up in the mountains next to Syria, like, that used to be in Syrian hands. The reason it's not in Syrian hands now is because they attacked Israel. And for their protection, Israel marched into the Golan Heights. There is no damn way you should give those things back. You can literally see Tel Aviv from there. If you have a power, and Damascus, by the way, so it goes both ways. Now it's in control of somebody who would not start attacking Damascus. You put that in Syrian hands? Come on. I mean, and the idea of these, you know, I hear from people here, even not attacking any wing of any party, but they are a wing of one party, talking about, oh, we should boycott Israel. Really? Really? Because why? Because they have the Golan Heights and they're trying to protect themselves from being shelled on. I mean, that's the stuff that makes me
these
angry.
These are weighty issues.
That's
really,
the stuff really
tough. Weighty is a good word. They're difficult issues that, as you said, if they could have been solved easily, they would have been solved. We're with State Senator Bobby Zirkin. All right, before we get away, you got an exciting new venture. You're running all over the United States helping athletes with charitable foundations.
It's all coming back to sports.
Tell us what's going on. Right?
So working with some guys.
How did it start, Bobby? Give us a background.
Well, you love sports.
I love sports, and I just honestly, I just want to play ball. That's all I really want. So, you know, it actually started because I started playing basketball in Torrey Smith's celebrity game every year. He has allowed me to be the token non-athlete that plays with a bunch of actual athletes. And so, you know, I always thought what he does is amazing. It's a huge platform, right? I mean, he's an amazing guy, unbelievably kind and charitable and community oriented and all the rest, and he uses that platform to give back so much. And so I thought that this was something that, as I've transitioned out of politics, would be something good to do, to help others to do that too, because they really, you know, these guys really do have a huge platform to do good, particularly for kids. So I'm working with a couple guys right now. Bradley Bozeman from the Ravens.
He's been on the show several times. We had him out.
Great.
And his wife doing the anti-bullying campaign, which I have a lot of respect for.
And that's an issue I care a lot about. We have, you know, Maryland, that was one of my proudest achievements, passing the strongest anti-bullying law in the country. Maryland, by a long shot, has the strongest anti-bullying law in the country. So when Bradley told me that was his issue, that was a natural. I love working with him on that issue. And Chuck Clark, who's an unbelievable safety and a really community-oriented guy.
Got an opportunity.
Yeah, he's got an opportunity, and he made the most of it. He's great. Darnell Savage is another guy, plays out with the Packers. Brandon Copeland.
So what do
amazing.
You do in this role, Bobby? Let our listeners know. How do you bring it all together?
Yeah, I mean, these guys most of these guys I've found really are interested in doing things in the community and, you know, pursuing issues that are of
this?
Importance.
I know these guys. Most of these guys need a guy like Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have enough guys like Bobby around them. A lot of guys. In the end, I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, having a guy like you be the point person for Bradley Bozeman is going to serve him well. They're not usually surrounded by Bobby Zirkins. Seriously, I mean that's just the truth.
It just I from all of our years, you too, from all and you too. I mean, in different spheres, but all of our, all my years in politics, like if you're interested in anti-bullying, I can help to get you to the places that you want to go. There are places to speak. There are conferences to be at. There are schools that. That I mean, the schools clearly
places that will amplify
him.
Your message.
Exactly.
You're doing this in addition to the law practice.
Yeah, the law practice.
What's your law practice? Because I don't think of you as a lawyer. I think of you as a basketball player.
That was part of the problem. I appreciate that. No, that was not a way to
say.
I
hear the last one.
He likes that.
Yeah, no, no,
he
we're good
that.
With that. I'm
he
fine.
Likes
no,
that.
My law practice is personal injury, family, workers' comp,
anti-bullying.
Yeah, we have a great new anti-bullying law that is needs to be used a lot more. So those are the types of things that we do in the law practice, and I'm really enjoying this stuff with the athletes. It's amazing. I mean, most of these guys I try to wean into doing whatever else we do. We try to do a celebrity basketball game in addition to all else, and my rule is I have to play in it. Like, I have to be that token non-athlete. So just as long as we have
my
that, we're good.
My role is to come and heckle you playing in
that's
the game.
That's Bobby,
as a guy, before we let you get away, really a public service announcement, because I think you get it. What would you say to young moms and dads out there who have these teenage children and they're conflicted between work and home? What would you tell them?
Okay. So for me, being at home, like being – I feel like for me – again, this is not, everybody has to do it differently, but with my kids, there's nothing more – satisfying, nothing better, nothing that I enjoy more than being with them and my family. So that was what drove me to kind of wean out of politics and get and to be able to be there, to be a coach, to be with them, to drive them to school or pick them up from school. Nothing more satisfying, nothing more important. I look at them and I'm like, sooner than later, they're not going to want to have anything. I'm going to be really embarrassing to them, which is fine. But
no, you're not, because you're a Raven guy.
Are they rolling it's their true. Eyes yet? Like, Dad, it was a little easier when you were down in Annapolis.
They roll their eyes at me all the time. But they can only roll. So I coach both of their basketball teams. So you roll your eyes too much, you end up on the bench. That's all. That's the rule.
Oh, wow.
Well, Bobby, thanks for coming in. It's been a great visit.
You're trying to get you on, man. I'm glad that things are going well. I know you.
Super Bowl next year, Bobby.
Yeah,
you had
definitely.
A tough 19. 20's off to a rough start on the football side, but we can work that out.
We'll get there.
Hey, Luke Jones grabbed me when we were walking out of the locker room on Saturday night. I'm really feeling particularly sorry for myself because it would have been a weekend. We had 5-10,000. You would have been at Dave and Buster's at Sheridan on 95. It would have been purple. But Luke grabbed me. He's like, look, man, it's just not meant to be. And Luke's spiritual, you know.
Right.
And Luke's like, it's meant to be the 20-year reunion in Tampa next year.
Yeah.
So if you see my set, on the left side of my set, I brought the Art Modell picture up. And for the next year, I'm going to talk about bringing the Kakua nuts to Lamar Jackson and put them on him in the same locker room where Art wore them just maybe it's meant to be.
They
that
should
way.
Sing "Who Let the Dog." They should bring "Who Let the Dogs Out" back. That was the problem. They should have never gotten rid of that song.
Do you remember when when we lost the game the first time in New England, the Cundiff game?
I was there.
I was at Ray's locker. I mean, that was just terrible. It was a dark moment. We had a long ride home, and I remember Ray saying, if it's not for you, it's not for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just not for. It was not our time. It's not our. And a year later. It was our this wasn't the time, and clearly it wasn't the time. I mean, we're not sitting here talking about a kick or a pass or this or that.
This
we're talking
a full,
about a complete full Harbaugh down coordinators, players, guys dropping pat all the way around a team loss. So for that, I can't. You know, I mean,
this is a team that's ready to roll though. Like this is a team.
The beginning
that's not
of their
going
window.
Anywhere. It
this is the beginning
I love Lamar
of their
Jackson.
Window.
I mean, such a nice guy. Also, he came to that Bradley Bozeman event.
Let's
that
let
we
Mahomes
had.
Let Mahomes get his get out of the way and then.
Right.
Let's do it.
I can't wait for next year to begin.
Oh,
it's like it's so many days away. It's killing me.
Well, the Jennings Burgers moments away. We're at Jennings Cafe.
All of our sponsors.
Absolutely. We're gonna be back down to Faithley's in Lexington Market. We're also gonna be up the street at State Fair. Check the whole schedule out at Baltimore Positive, right underneath where you see these cool videos. Big thanks to Bobby Zirkin for joining us. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive, off to Super Bowl 54. Baltimore Positive continues, and more programming. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.